Welcome to this limited series podcast called Teaching and Learning in a Pandemic. I'm Holly Clark with my co-host Ken Shelton, and we're looking at lessons learned and those lessons we can use to transform education in the future. So let's jump into the conversation. We're finding that a lot of school districts right now are seeing lots of F's on report cards. And so we want to say and talk about, how are you measuring it then? Is it about accuracy? Is it about taking tests? Is it about completion of assignments? And should you be giving an F in the middle of a pandemic? So Ken, I'm going to let you start. I know you feel passionately about some of these grading practices. And I just want to say, we have to realize before we begin that these grades and this learning loss is being measured against a billion-dollar industry who stands to make even more billions by defining this learning loss and making it a problem in our schools.
First of all, we only measure what we truly value. And I think that sometimes what is measured shouldn't be valued. And so in the context of like what you're asking, you know, I really think that educators, we really, 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 really need to interrogate grades. So the whole idea around this arbitrary letter is representational of my quote unquote learning. And I stress the use of the word arbitrary because I know for me in school, and then even from when I taught, you know, you take the exact same subject matter, and let's say you have two teachers that are following a pacing plan, which is a whole nother problematic thing. It's such a problematic thing because the whole idea around a pacing plan for the audience, if you're not sure, the whole idea around a pacing plan is that if you have a high transient student population, so you have students that are transferring in and out and a lot of student movement, that they should be able to go from one class to the next class and still be caught up, if you will, or not be too far behind. But by the same token, you could go in a different class, same subject matter, same spot on that pacing plan, and do the same performance and get a completely different grade. And so the whole idea around grades is just so problematic for me that, you know, and I recognize that as educators, there's only so many things that we could push back against. But I really think that the more we push grading into the prevailing narratives around what exactly is the point of grading, which, newsflash, my unresearched opinion is that grades are designed to stratify students and make it easier for higher ed to further stratify students by way of who they admit. That's what I think grades are for. That's it. And so right now,
what about grades in a pandemic?
So, and yes, and now I'm glad you mentioned that, because the thing is this, I don't think any student should be given an F right now. But I'm going to qualify that. If as a school and as a teacher, you've exhausted any and all resources, attempts at contact, attempts at providing support, if you've exhausted all of the above and you've got a student that is literally not showing up and not done anything in class, then unfortunately, then that's what you got to do. I've just seen it where, you know, and if it's funny because I had a whole Twitter thread about this where I had basically said that, you know, any teacher that derives pleasure from failing students really needs to assess why they work in education in the first place and really consider resigning. And I feel that way about it because ultimately, if a student fails, you know, it's the whole idea around meritocracy, you know, which is a myth. If a student fails, the sole responsibility is placed on that individual. Well, the student didn't do this, the student didn't do that, the student didn't perform, the student had learning loss, the student, you know, any one of a litany of reasons. When my whole thing is, no, actually, the system failed that student, because did you assess what resources and support the student needed? Did you assess what different differentialities in regards to how a student learns, how you assess the learning, ways in which you assess the learning, what weight is placed on things like multiple choice tests, which you and I both have had lengthy conversations around, that we don't feel that multiple choice tests truly assess any degree of knowledge and understanding of things. And so ultimately, that's when you get in the whole idea around grading practices, which, by the way, grading practices are inequitable by design. Like, I have a question for you real quick. And then because I know you have some thoughts to share on this as well. And this is one of those topics you and I both feel very strongly about and are 99.9% in agreement. who determined that 0 to 59 is an F, 60 to 69 is a D, 70 to 79 is a C, and so forth? Who determined that? And so here's one, and this is it's not a shameless plug, but it is I'm just thinking of it now as we're having this conversation, and I mentioned it on my Twitter post. I need to do a blog posting on this, because I'll give an example for your audience here. If I were successful 30% of the time at doing something, would you say that that's good?
Well, I think I would if you were a batter.
Bingo. See, If I'm a baseball player and I'm successful, if I bat 300, 30% of the time I get a hit, guess what? I will not only be able to play Major League Baseball, but I will have a long career.
You'll be batter number four.
The cleanup hitter. And then by the same token, what if I went up a little bit higher and said, what if I'm successful 45% of the time at something? Would that be? And I'll give you context. 45% shooting percentage from the 3-point line.
Right. And listen, if you come to me in a job interview and say, Holly, I want to work for the Infused Classroom, and 45% of the time, I'm going to have some darn successes hired. Because guess what? We get about 10% of real success, great thinking out of workers when we're working even with them in a team. But here's something that you sent to me, Ken, that I found mind-blowing. And you sent me a tweet because you know I'm really into this learning law. So this woman, Amelia Sherwood, and I'm going to read directly from her tweet, said, I know this, but I had to be reminded that the phrase, quote, your child is behind or below, end quote, is a social construction. Let me say that again, is a social construction. The system's benchmarks have always been flawed. We will keep resisting this illusion. We encourage our learners to be self-reflective and find joy in the process. And one of the things that's always struck me is when I went to New Zealand for the first time, one of the things I was asking people in my session, like, what's really important to you as an educator? And they were the only ones and remain the only ones who answered, we want our students to be happy. What happened to that? And I don't want to go into the happiness because we're talking about learning loss and inequality, but we have to understand that this is a social construction and that 59% right now in a pandemic is some crazy talk.
Yep.
That if you do 59% of your work, you're going to get an F right now. And one of the things that I talk about a lot in the Chromebook Infused Classroom is that, and I don't mean to plug it, but it's really important to me, is this idea that we need to rethink digital assessments. We need to get at student thinking and understanding, let them explain their thinking and knowledge to us and not ask them to regurgitate content on multiple choice questions that their little brother or older brother could be telling them the answers to in a pandemic situation. We need to have kids talk about their learning. We need to understand that pedagogy is one thing, but digital pedagogies, where we use these digital tools to power up our learning experiences and ask students what they can do with the technology, not how can we add technology to our lesson. That's when we get at what this pandemic, teaching and learning in a pandemic, needs to look like. 60% of your assignments done in a pandemic? God bless you. That's incredible.
Yeah, you're right. Because I've got some friends that are, you know, they've got students that are able to turn in 25%. And listen, here's the thing. Every single one of my friends that is a teacher that said that, they've literally said to me, not a single one of those students is going to fail this class. There's two things. One, I refuse to allow them to fail. And if they produce some work that helps me understand, essentially get an understanding of what they've learned, not a single one of them will fail the class. Not a single one. And so I agree with you on that. And, you know, and I also think that it is important to account for, because you mentioned it at the beginning, you know, the whole equity piece here. Not every student has the same device. Not every student has the same connectivity. Not every student has the same resources and support in the home. Not every student, you know, God only knows what's going on with the students that have IEPs and need additional services or support services when they are in school right now.
Most schools are bringing them back. So those kids are getting to be face to face with their teachers. I think every district is doing that.
So, here's the thing. That's great. But I would add, those are the students that have gone through some degree of a formalized process to identify that need. What about the ones that maybe haven't been identified or the ones that that don't qualify for those services but do need some degree of support.
So let me tell you a story, because we said we're going to talk about stories. So I was working with a teacher who had a student that was on camera, because it was back when everyone was like, we need them on camera. And she noticed that it looked like he was on a couch, and he moved, and the blanket that was there and looked like a couch actually was a car seat. And they were sitting outside of a McDonald's trying to get Wi-Fi. I implore you, we don't know the stories of our students. And if that kid is doing 25%, that is Herculean. And that kid should not be getting an F, because he's building the skills, or she, that they need. So when they are back in a face-to-face situation, they have a foundation in which they can quickly and easily build. Like, if I need to learn French right now, I can do it quickly because I have a foundation.
I saw a story not too long ago where a student, actually I've seen this now a few times, where some students are, their parents are driving them to school. So school shut down, but they're driving them to school and they're sitting outside the complex to connect to the Wi-Fi at the school. Okay, that's not, look, I say it all the time and I'm going to continue to say it. The internet needs to be designated as a utility, and there needs to be an investment in our infrastructure to ensure broadband access across the board. So in our urban areas and our rural areas, those are the areas that are most adversely affected by a lack of broadband infrastructure. And so, you know, even in that context, you know, look, I'm not one to subscribe to grading for effort, because again, that means that you're still playing the grading game. But I am one for recognizing that not every student has uninhibited access to learning, and not every student has the necessary resources to realize their full potential. And so as an educator, as a school leader, as a district leader, you know, my question I love asking school leaders is, how might you redefine the ways in which you assess learning that account for those differentials? Not every student, you know, it's an equality thing, you know, treating everyone the same is just as inequitable as treating everyone differently. And so in this context, you want to adjust for the individual based on that individual circumstance. And to your point, what are the stories? You know, I love challenging educators, and it's something that I actually challenge myself on as well, is, you know, how well do you know your students beyond their name and their number?
Exactly. Because if you don't know that they're sitting in a car right now and they're sitting at McDonald's and you're giving them an F, you don't know enough about your kids.
You don't. And honestly, that right there, if you know, since I'm big on, obviously, as you know, I'm big on being mindful when it comes to social and emotional learning, you're causing harm to kids by doing that. Mm-hmm. If you have the awareness, mm-hmm, that a child has to go through that type of a circumstance to be connected to the learning, or, you know, to the class, if you will, and you don't account for the additional efforts that the child has to make that many of their classmates don't, and you treat it as a, you know, you treat it with punitive actions, that's not good.
No. And we have to think about, so there's a lot of people, especially teachers, who are not affected job-wise by a pandemic. They have to work harder. They have, you know, there's a lot of stress, but they're not food insecure right now. There's millions of people who are food insecure, housing insecure, and we're going into a big second wave. It's just not the time. No. It's just not the time to be talking about learning loss. It's not the time to be worried about some of these things. If your kid is showing up, they're getting something. And if you are trying to give them that same content that you would have given them in a face-to-face situation, you've got to subscribe to the model that less is more.
Correct.
Right now. You do not know what's happening at their home.
You're right. I actually, though, I do want to add one thing here based on something you just said. There's a lot of teachers, there's a lot of site administrators, and there's a lot of district administrators that are highly stressed right now as well.
Yes.
So it's you know, so for those of you listening, you know, what we're pointing out is not just from the student experience perspective. It's across the board. And ultimately for me, one of the most effective pieces of advice I've given many of my friends that are classroom teachers now is exactly what you just said. less is more, focus only on the essentials, because that serves two purposes. One, it gives your students room and space to be able to operate within the learning constraints that they have right now, assess what their resources are, and by you embodying less is more, it takes some of the pressure off of you to try to keep up with what you would normally be doing in a face-to-face environment. And then now you don't have to constantly seek additional resources support from the site administrator or a district level administrator. Like there's a whole domino effect there. If we all look at the situation and say, okay, things are different and we need to approach them differently with a less is more attitude, that will support the social and emotional health of literally everyone across the board. Like I have a couple of friends I talked to last week, and they finally broke down because they were like, look, I've been giving an assignment today because that's what we were told. And I'm like, so basically, let me get this straight. You're giving a big assignment to every student every day, and then you have to grade all those assignments to get them back to the students for the feedback, of which not all of them are going to do it because I don't have the resources, assuming you are even in contact with all of them. And then some that you are in contact with may do it, may not do it, but then you have some that do it, but then you still have to grade them all. You see that whole thing? Think about that. Not only is that putting more stress on the students, but it's also more stress on the teachers. And I know many of my friends that are what I would call exceptional educational leaders, they're like, look, focus on the essentials, make sure that all of your social and emotional needs are met, and especially those of the students. And whatever you can accomplish within the context of what we are doing, consider that a victory. And that's all that you should be looking at.
So my advice is, if you're an administrator right now and you're hearing this idea of learning loss and you are wondering what's happening with learning, go grab two of your best teachers who you know are pretty tech savvy and ask to see the learning products that are coming out of that classroom. Ask to have a conversation with them, and don't listen always to the parents who might be at the district office because they truly believe that there is learning loss happening right now. And that's almost a political situation. It's becoming a political situation, and we've got to not let that happen. You've got to be armed with those great products. I could show you amazing stuff that's happening with eighth graders right now. And if you're armed with some of that, you'll see that the learning loss, you might just reframe it. That's what we want from this episode, is that you think about, how can we refocus this negative language of learning loss to empowering teachers, empowering students, helping teachers rethink assessments and learn some of those engagement strategies. I know that a lot of school districts have gotten money right now. Seek out the people who can help you with those engagement strategies and understand that not all students are in the same situation. So your differentiation game, your individualization game needs to be on point right now as a teacher. And what that means is, we hear a lot about differentiation. And I'm a huge fan of Carol Ann Tomlinson, who kind of came up with the idea, but I think we need to go one step further and now call it individualization. You need to understand those individuals sitting in your class, and that 25% could be Herculean and does not deserve an F.
Yeah, that's rethinking assessment, rethinking learning, rethinking scoring. Rethinking it all. Mm-hmm. You know, I do think it's important also to point out, you mentioned something as well, is for any of the listeners to really consider something that I stress in many of my talks, and that is, learning loss is still aligned with deficit-based language in schools. And if you start to really examine the language that is used and the messaging that goes out to students, how much of it, if you were to do two columns and list, how much would, which list would be longer, asset focused or deficit focused?
I mean, Ken, if you're asking me, I know what I think, but having administrators take stock in that is really important. And I'm wondering if standardized testing started that deficit talk, because I was teaching before there was No Child Left Behind, and it wasn't like this. It wasn't your kid isn't, your school isn't, your, it was, What makes your kids like happy? What makes them interested? Let's go with that.
Well, you know, and that's why for me, one of the things I'm intentional on is I share with people that I don't use the word low performing school. I use the phrase under resourced, because that's the truth. They're under resourced. And in fact, several of the schools that I worked at, I used to always ask the question, I'm like, how come we don't have access to the following things? And like, well, because those aren't being provided or so on and so forth. And I'm like, you know, that is literally a travesty, because I can walk down the street to the fire station or a little bit farther to the police station, and they get all the resources they need to perform the essential functions of their job. So again, going back to testing and measurement, what do we value? If you are not providing the resources necessary for all the educators across the board at many of our under-resourced schools, then what's going on there? And I do think that does tie in with what you shared around, you know, the standardized testing and even No Child Left Behind, because, you know, I could share plenty of stories. Just for time's sake, I'll only share a snippet of one is, you know, learning cannot be measured in anything that is standardized, because learning has to be localized, contextualized, and personalized. I had many of situations where many of my students would learn valuable life lessons outside of school. And in fact, one of my favorite books that I love to share, Dr. Christopher Emden, he kind of examines that a little bit on, you know, what are kids learning and how much do they learn at places like a barbershop, church, and in the areas where I used to work, especially in East and Southeast LA, you had church, you had the local family owned store, restaurant. I mean, like, there's a lot of things. In fact, I remember one of my former students' parents own a tortilleria there. And, you know, I remember asking him, like, okay, so you're learning real life, real world math, because you have to work with your parents on things like bookkeeping, on purchasing of materials, you know, how do you know what pricing to set on the menu? How do you know how many customers you need? You know, all those things. So again, that's not in the classroom though. And, you know, to your point,
we don't value that.
No. And here's the thing. How contradictory or hypocritical is it to say we want kids to embody and develop an entrepreneurial mindset, but you don't teach them entrepreneurial skills like that?
Well, that's like a whole podcast.
That's a whole nother episode for us.
Yeah. We're not going to go into that. But the basis here, and the message I hope that we're getting across, is what you said, this deficit language. Let's really be cognizant of this in this pandemic, especially when we're going into a really, really big second wave. And that kind of gives me a segue into another episode that we're going to record, which is around equity, equality, and what's really happening with these COVID numbers in the schools. And I think you're going to be really surprised by some of the statistics we're going to share. We're also going to give you a place that you can go and follow your own school, follow your own state, at least 24 of them. There are 26 states not reporting their COVID statistics, which is a whole show too, right? But so that's going to be our next episode, and it's going to be around equality in the pandemic. So we hope to see you there. And Ken, thank you for your insights. I loved what you said about deficit learning. Such a takeaway for me.
Right on. Thank you.
We want to take a moment and say thank you to our sponsor, Book Creator. Book Creator is an incredible app to use in a blended learning classroom, as it allows students to do more than create books, but interact with their learning. Check them out at app.bookcreator.com. It's definitely one of my favorite applications for teaching and learning in the classroom. Teaching and learning in the pandemic has definitely made us rethink what assessment should look like in the digital age. For more help, download your free assessment toolkit at infuse.link/podcast. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Teaching and Learning in a Pandemic. This is a limited series that will disappear in early 2021, so make sure to listen to all the episodes before they're gone.